Welcome to Live at the Backyard Comedy Club podcast with me, David Whitney, and my co-host, Chris Anastasi. How are you, Chris?
I'm very well. How are you, David?
I'm all right. It's been a long night.
Well, it's the end of a night, isn't
it? Well, yeah.
Thursday night
at the backyard. And we had a lot of acts on this evening that were all been in new act competitions in the last 18 months. And we have two of them here with us today. Hello.
Hello.
Esther and Heidi. Did you enjoy yourself this evening?
Yes.
I had a lovely time.
Yeah, you both were really good. You both... What were the new act competitions that you were both in?
So You Think You're Funny.
And then we were both in both.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in BBC New Comedy.
BBC New Comedy, yeah. And was that a grand final, the BBC thing? Was it a big thing, or was it...?
Yeah, it was in the tent in the Teviot Square in Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
It was really nice. It wasn't too big. It was like, I think it's like 200 or 300, but it was like, it felt quite nice.
Uh-huh. And So You Think Funny was in the debating hall at the Gilded Balloon, was that?
Yeah.
Yeah. How was that? It's a big old room.
It's a very big room and a very hot room.
It got so hot.
It was very hot.
It's a room that Late and Live is in. Did you do Late and Live while you were up there?
No.
It's quite an experience.
Yeah,
are you aware of Late and Live, Chris?
I am not. No, please.
Late and Live starts at 1 o'clock in the morning at the Gilded Balloon at the Edinburgh Festival, and it is on every night, 30 nights, starting at 1 a.m. So the show goes to like 4 a.m.
Wow.
And
better be some jaded audiences in there.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing: audiences have a different experience of drinking than they. Nowadays, I think. So 10, 12 years ago, when you did it, it was like playing a rave. And now you're going on trying to wake them up. People just don't have the same stamina as they used to.
No, they don't.
Why would that be?
I think just
lower body fat percentages.
They were fatter, but they were happier and more
awake. I think they're thinner.
Yeah. Jamie Oliver's fault, that one.
I'm getting healthy.
Yeah, change the school dinners, all these lads coming out of school, 16 abs. I didn't know what an ab was till I was 25. It's ridiculous.
I still don't know what an ab is. Yeah. It's something on my car, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. You both played that night, or...?
No, I went to watch Esther at So You Think Funny.
No, Heidi won So You Think You're Funny the year before.
Mm.
And then she came to watch me.
Esther just pulled a really, really supportive face.
Because she just tells me all the time. Like, just
reminding
FYI,
you
were just a finalist. I was a winner.
So. I went to watch Esther to support her, and this is how she pays me back. And then Esther and I were in the BBC Heat together, which Esther got a wild card.
I was runner-up to Heidi, who won.
But when I asked you two, I did not realise that this dynamic existed between the two of you. I wish I had known. I wish I could take credit for putting the...
We tried to avoid each other quite a lot.
You literally won't leave me. She brought a travel cot to my house the other day.
Just to sleep in the house.
For my niece and nephew, and it was really kind. But she's a jerk.
I've got a really deep voice. So.
I didn't do Late Night, and it looks terrifying from what I've heard.
Yeah, it is and it isn't.
Which is hard to do if you've...
Well, just because there's no pressure on you, really, because it is this sort of, like, you know, the best have died there, the best have been booed off, if you're at a gig where, you know, that people, like, you know, gods like Glenn will haven't been able to get through a barrage of heckles and have walked off, then you think, well, there's no, you know, if you get anything, you think, well, I'm winning. Because it's, you know, Late and Live. Yeah. Sometimes you can go out and it's just a delightful gig, you know. And sometimes Edinburgh is such a long fucking month, and if you're playing to, like, a dozen people a gig after gig and you suddenly walk in front of 300 people at 1 a.m. and you're like, oh, an audience, I remember this. It sounds like it's a terrible bear pit, but I don't think anybody is really, you know, no one holds it against you if you die late in life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That'd be ridiculous. Yeah.
Have you done spank as well?
I haven't done spank. I've never done spank.
I used to go watch that years ago when I would go to the festival.
Yeah,
so I was the drunk audience.
Yeah, I
remember
me too.
Being quite friendly in that, but now it sounds...
Is it? Oh, it's what, spank? Has it got?
Oh, I don't think it's. I don't know if it's changed or anything. But now that you view it from a comic perspective,
right.
Suddenly you don't think of it as a bit of fun. You think, oh god.
Right, sure. So you've done spank now?
No, I got after Edinburgh. I had an email issue with my email from my, and I found I got 2 weeks worth of emails at the end. There was one from
spank
saying,
you.
"Do you want to come to a gig?" And I was really glad I'd missed it because I would have gone. I got to do it, and right. Then I would have. Not done well, and I would have been sad.
Yeah, you might have done, you know. How long have you been going, Heidi?
2 years, 2.5 years.
2.5 years, and how long have you been going?
1.5 years.
1.5 years, all right, yes, yeah, so that 1 year.
I feel like I'm your mentor.
Is,
that's ridiculous because you're 11 years old.
Yeah,
so.
That's true.
so you're a grown up, you're a mum.
I am.
When I hear men managing to have a career and have a family, I think, whew, how the fuck do you do that? But it must be a Herculean effort to...
Thanks, David.
It must be.
I'm going to take that as a quote.
Herculean
effort.
She is a Herculean effort.
This news-reading wonder. It is. It's full on.
Yeah, it must be. I have no experience of it. It just sounds like something far too much hard work. I'm ready for a gig in the evening, and all I've had to do is shake off my hangover from the night before. So.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Esther and I were both doing some writing like a month ago, and I had my nephew and niece visit for the weekend, which is why she brought me a travel cot. And they left at like 5 p.m. on the Sunday, and that evening I was like, I have no energy to write, and I messaged saying, how do you write with actual children? She said, that's why I want you to be more impressed by me.
I really want. I want more people to come up and go, that's amazing, and so few do.
Yeah, I've now forgotten it when I watch. Yeah. I'm like, well, she should be more awake.
Just like, why is she sleeping on stage? Yeah. No, it's like, you just want, I keep dropping hints to people. I'm so tired because I've got like kids and stuff, and no one picks up on it. They're just like, whatever, get over it, bitch.
It's easy maths because it's 1.5 years from now, but how old were your children when you started to do stand-up?
So my daughter was 2 and my son was 5 months.
The easy ages.
And what
That's
was
when
it,
everyone takes up a hobby.
What was it when your life was so full with 2 newly born children that made you think,
man, these
you know
are
what
nuts.
I need? I need to impress some strangers.
After I had my son, I realised that I'd kind of lost all personality. And I was sat in...
A bit harsh of your son to point it out to
you. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, it's really rude. He was just like, you're incredibly dull to be on my own with every day.
Personality, or are you still... Work?
You can just shut your face.
I'm loving this. I didn't even know you two knew each other, so this is...
We've never met.
Heidi has sexually harassed me since the moment I started on the circuit, and it's getting a little bit awkward now.
I have heard that you are referred to as Mrs. Spacey.
Oh, are we going to start doing this?
No, we're not. Sorry, I started it. Which
you did start.
I always do. But no, so essentially just
that's
kind of...
That's what Kevin Spacey says.
Yeah.
Sorry. Shh. I derailed from your...
Yeah, no, it's my really poignant story. But, no, essentially, I had my son, I was at home, I was with 2 children, and I was like, I have nothing to say anymore. I've, like, lost all ability to... I don't know, I just felt like I'd kind of lost an element of me. So I thought, I want to do something that's going to be just getting a bit of that back. So I decided to do the comedy course at Camden Comedy School.
Uh-huh.
With absolutely zero intention of doing the showcase at the end. I was like, I'll do the course, that'll be fun, get out of the house, and I won't do the showcase. But then I did.
So stand-up was some sort of method of sort of reconnecting with yourself?
No, so I thought I was going to be doing a comedy writing course. My friend enrolled on the course with me, and she was like, it's comedy writing, and then I realised it was stand-up.
Oh, wow. No way!
Yeah.
Does your friend still do stand-up?
Off and on.
Who's, do I know them?
No.
Why are you being cagey with their name?
And you never will.
Yeah.
It seems. At what point of the course, or was it the showcase, you went, oh, actually, I like this, let's do it again?
Yeah.
So when they said we're doing the showcase now, did you think I'll make myself do it, or did you think actually I'll
No, watch. As the course went on, I was like, actually, I'm quite enjoying this, and I'm quite enjoying like making people laugh and just being a bit kind of narcissistic. I wanted to be more selfish, and now I've enjoyed that more. Uh-huh. So now I'm becoming more and more selfish.
Well, your roots stand-up was this sort of Buddhist way of reconnecting with yourself. Why did you start doing it, Heidi? For the tale?
Yeah. it hasn't worked. I wrote for years and years.
I don't know that programme.
I got nothing funny to say that. Yeah, like for years and years, and then I...
What did you... What,
like script, film scripts and for a couple of sketch shows and stuff, but mostly things that will never be seen and never have and never will.
That's the life of a writer, isn't it, Chris?
It is until something goes.
Are you still here, Chris?
Yeah. it is until the one.
Yeah. Well, I thought I had the one. I had like one that nearly and then not, and then I was like, scripts take forever. I'm going to write a book. That'll be quicker. Because I'm an idiot. And I don't read books enough, so it was a terrible book. But it took me 2.5 years. And I was still working on it. And I went to visit a friend in America who was trying to write a sitcom script. And I had a, like, middle-of-the-night proper panic attack, epiphany, whatever. I think it was a panic attack. Where I was just like, I've just wasted 2.5 years on this book. Nothing I write is ever going to be seen. What am I doing with my life? And then I was like... freaking out on my own in this dodgy hotel, and then I was just, my brain was like, let's distract you, and started thinking up stand-up ideas.
Right.
I thought, I'll just write them down to get them out of my head and get to sleep. And in the morning I was like, oh, I like them, but I had massive stage fright and I never wanted to do stand-up, but I just thought, know now that anything horrific that happens, I'll forget it within a year, I'll just go try it. So then I tried it a month later. And
what was the gap between that night of the fever dream?
Yeah, I think it was a month or so, and I went. I knew had a friend who ran Harriet Kemsley. She was MC at Cavendish. So I said, I want to try stand up. So she like looked after me, and I went on stage and did it. And then I was so terrified, and then I did it and went, oh, that wasn't the worst thing. Yeah. So then now I love it, but it took me like 6 months to a year to not be terrified of.
I'm fascinated by this idea of writing to go to sleep. Is that something that you do?
No, I think because it was a proper panic attack that my brain was just like, blah. But because I don't usually have them, like that's how I wrote for so many years without questioning my life choices.
I love the fact that you talk about your brain as being a separate person.
Oh, it's very separate. Okay.
Yeah, you have to deal with it like a separate person. It's like that, like crazy cousin or uncle that you're just like, we'll just put them in the living room while we all have a nice time. Make sure
it's saying
soft,
some horrible things right now.
Yeah, it's just we're not getting to put it near the rest of the family or the people we actually care about.
That was her brain.
But that fever writing does happen. It comes to you at like weird times in the morning. I still get it every now and then where I wake up at 2 a.m. and it's where I get some of my best work.
No, definitely. Yeah. And then you read it. Once I found a note that just said cheese! Exclamation mark! I'm like, I don't think that was your best idea, and I don't know what it was about.
Yeah, like anyone writing or in comedy, their phone notes are the most.
Yeah.
I don't go anywhere with phone notes.
You know?
It doesn't work for me, and I don't really.
Thumbs.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not. I don't really. I'm a performer who happens to write. Some people are writers who perform or performers who write. So I don't really ever sit down to write anything. It's an idea that I take on stage and then...
Do you work it out on stage?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well,
so like that bit tonight that I did about Mother.
I just take an idea that I like and then I just vocalise it on stage. Like, you know, tonight when it just didn't happen and then I just was like, blowjobs. That was essentially, I had the joke in my mind.
Oh, really? That's what I want to get.
When I do write it down, it's more like a memory exercise that if... Like I've gone, oh, that's good, I should write that down. But it's not so I ever go back and read it. It's the actual act of writing it down solidifies it into a different part of my head than me just going, oh, that was good.
Yeah.
I so rarely ever go back to a notebook, mainly because I can't read my own writing. But there's something about the process of writing something with a pen and paper, that the process of writing it sticks it in my brain,
whereas
the process of putting it into Evernote or the note section of my phone does not put it into that section of my brain for some reason.
But I sometimes find that when you're writing it, like pen and paper, it loses all its funny. Like in your mind, you're like, oh, that's really funny. So then you write it out and you're like, oh, actually, now it's, I'm now trying to explain my joke to myself on pen and paper. So that's why I like to just take an idea and just thrash it out a few times.
And that nothing, I find, the sort of live fire of comedy. Right, I've got now a very long routine about the price of beer versus the price of oil. And now it's about 6 minutes long. And it literally came out of me going, but somebody was whining about the price of petrol. And I was like, beer's eight times the price of petrol.
And now it's 8 minutes, is it?
About that, but just about 6 minutes, I think. And it was, I never wrote it down, I just each time improvised a little bit further and a little bit further.
And
that was more, but I mean, everybody works in different ways.
Yeah, I'm the total reverse, but I'm trying to, I'm now getting to the point where I'll write a rough thing and say it on stage and not be sure exactly, but I used to be word for word.
Right,
but you're more of a storyteller, so you're telling a long story which has an ending, so I can understand why you'd need to plan that a little bit more, whereas in, I think, because I'm a bit more like gag comic, it's just like, I know what the punchline should be. I just need to get there.
Do you have trouble remembering where you're going to go when you're on stage with it?
No.
You do a lot more. You sound like you're doing a lot more crowd work as well. These are, your last three stories tonight were like, and I just talked to the crowd for 5 minutes. And I was like, how?
Do you not ever? I mean, tonight.
And I'm trying to more, and I would love to get MC work to get, but because I had such stage fright for so long, I was terrified. And also because my jokes are so structured, it never, it's not like people would interrupt me or anything, but I'm trying to get, that's what my dream is, to be like myself on
stage. Run your own gigs.
Start by writing them scripts and handing it out. You could say
I literally did that like 2 weeks ago.
There you go.
And then I was like, no, anyway, I should try to actually talk.
But it's the difference of when someone relates to material or not. And I think with me, I'll always have someone that's going to go talk about, like there'll be a mum in the audience or something. And that's when you can just talk to them. And that's...
And I'm like, who here remembers Hitler? Well, anyway, shut up. I've got a really structured thing about him. Literally tonight, the guy going, it's Voldemort.
Very excited.
They were quite irritating. Towards the end, it was a beautiful audience.
I thought it was a nice audience tonight,
but they were, for the listeners at home, we had quite a full house here tonight, and there were some people that were overly excited about the show. And they were charming towards the beginning of the show, but towards the end of the show, I think people that were in the vicinity of the overexcited people were starting to get pissed off about the overexcited people, which led to, I think, some of the performers thinking that they weren't doing very well, were doing well.
Yeah,
it's just the audience, what audience member B was pissed off with audience member B.
I think Esther and I got the tipping point of alcohol.
Quite often as a compare, sometimes I realise, oh, you're a lot of fun now.
Yeah.
But there is going to be...
You were here that night when the guy took his trousers off, weren't you?
Yes.
That's literally etched in my memory. It's
I hadn't even thought
memorable
that once.
Esther just told it at the bar and Nick was like, that is a first.
Yeah.
Because he was so proud and the woman that he was with, they were on...
Tell the story.
So I got on to... I literally was... Because I was doubling up and I came in late because my daughter had a massive tantrum and I was trying to get out of the house and I rushed in. I was like, got on stage and started my set and then realised that a man in like the second or third row was sat with no trousers on, but he'd draped his trousers over the back of the seat next to a woman who was just mortified by everything going on. And when asked, I think it was you.
Yeah, I was comparing that. Yeah,
and you were like, so what's the setup here? And she had then said that they were like on this internet date and she didn't even know him that well.
Yes, now I remember.
She had come on a date with this guy who then got absolutely trashed and took his trousers off. So then when I came on, he was just, every joke I said, he was just like, yeah. And at one point, I think I accused him of sexual molestation because he had no trousers on. I was like, you're really rapey and weird. And I think you just need to put your trousers on. And then when I went home, I think Jamali Maddox was on that night, and Jimmy Jimmy.
Look, I can't
Jones.
Remember people's names when I'm on.
But I just remember on Jimmy Facebook there was just a discussion, and they were like, was the man with no trousers on, like, no trousers on, was he there when you were there? And I was like, yes, there was a man with no trousers. So he literally spent the entire night. He'd gone from when I was on to when the headline was on with no trousers on.
Did he say why?
No, but what I liked is
he said it was hot.
Yeah, he was hot. That's right. He said he was hot. And then he kept going, picking up his trousers, shaking them out to get change out so he could go and buy more drink. And at no point did that woman just run away.
No.
Yeah. Well, also, did the bar, within a bar, say, like, put your trousers on?
No, he put his trousers on
to go and then take them back off.
Yeah.
Like a jacket.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not sitting in my trousers.
Can you imagine if a woman had just taken her trousers off and was just sat in her knickers?
Yeah.
That's why we're not on equal.
That's why
I did wonder where you got the idea from before you came into the podcast. If you wouldn't mind putting them back on, that'd be great.
No, I'm happy.
I will not put these back on.
Esther, can you tell the story also of what the man said to it? The nice compliment he gave, but the confusing one. Or can you know?
Tonight, the gentleman that approached
me. And the newsreader.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to give away the punchline, but you just
said. Yeah. Too late.
Well, two things happened. Firstly, a woman came up. I was stood next to Heidi, and she went, "Your set was amazing," looking directly at Heidi, and I almost just kind of pushed Heidi's face away and went, "Thank you," as if it was a compliment to me. And then had to kind of go, "I am so embarrassed that I've just done that."
That's not the story I was going to tell.
Oh, you didn't do it deliberately.
Tell that story.
I literally just, the ego was just like, "Thanks." Also, and I was like, "Oh my God."
You were mock telling me off as she came over, and then you just went,
"Heidi freaking Regan, she wins everything." Yeah, thanks for complimenting me. I was like, "No, that was aimed at me." But no, a guy came up to compliment me and Heidi, both of us, mm-hmm. before you get all, it was just aimed at you. And then he said, I live in Manchester. Would you like to come and do some gigs up there?
Yeah.
And then Heidi left me with him because she's really nice. And then
he was nice. I was just coming to do the podcast. You were going for a cigarette.
Yeah, okay. And then he said,
he's not a proper booker, is he? This isn't going to do us out of work.
It could be. It's not, the story is not about the, it's about the specific.
But then he thought that I should be a newsreader. That was his feedback to me. That I should tell the news.
But I just like that he said, because you've got a deep voice and could say bad news.
And I could say bad news.
Yeah.
So.
I think it's quite a crafty line, sort of like, I'd take bad news from you.
I just like that he found you funny, but also imagined you telling really sad news to him. Like, you should be a grief counselor. Your set was great.
Your set was great. You should tell people their mums have died.
You should read the news from the gravitas you just left in that room.
Yeah. You really set a news tone.
In his backhand compliment.
Yeah, I didn't do it that badly.
He did. No, he thought you were funny. That's why the story is funny, because he thought you were both funny and news ready.
News needs lightening up.
Anchorman quality.
Yeah.
Like, that's something I've never, ever thought. No, weirdly, I have been told that before.
That you could be
a
newsreader.
Were you wearing a burgundy suit at the time?
What does Ron Burgundy
big
say?
Mustache.
Yeah. I do have a big mustache, which I've now got rid of. Good night, San Diego. There you go.
Yeah, Wales vagina.
This could
he
be
does
your...
say that, yeah. And it is, does link to me.
This could be your new accidental career that you've fallen into again.
I don't want to be a newsreader.
You didn't want to be a stand-up either, so.
apart from the manufacturing of human beings, what did you do before stand-up?
I'm a teacher.
Yeah. She has good teacher stories.
Oh, yeah.
I want her to tell them on stage.
I've got some stuff that Heidi would like to tell everyone about.
Nope. but you should tell your teacher stories on stage.
This is amazing. I didn't know you were a couple. This is...
a really angry one.
Yeah. It's now become an expose.
And I never talk about the kids. Tell them about your kids.
Could fucking pull your weight just once, Heidi Regan. I mean, we went through all that effort to get eggs implanted and...
She's great with it.
All the male comics we had to get to sperm donate. We don't
How
even know
many?
Who their dads are.
How many kids did we have?
We had six. We live in a shoe.
What happened to the four that are not with you anymore?
They are currently working for
a news program.
Direct and the news.
They inherited their mum's news voice.
Pressing iPads in the Far East.
Living with Angelina Jolie. Jolie, where all good kids go. you new act. So new act in comedy. In fact, actually, how long is a new act a new act? I don't know.
It's a very flexible term, isn't it? I mean,
it's more of a mind state of mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people say so. People say such arbitrary things to you when you start. I remember somebody saying to me, "Yeah, you pretty much like your first gig for the first 100 gigs," and I thought that's bollocks. And then I heard, like, after I'd been doing it for about 8 years, you're not really a real act until you've done it 10 years.
Oh,
and I was
geez.
Like, fuck off.
10 years?
No, it's like you're...
But, I mean, you do have penny drops of finding your voice progressively. I've been going 11 years now, and you are constantly learning, but also constantly learning the same lessons. Didn't I learn that 18 months ago? For fuck's sake, retain something, Whitney. I think the term for the new acts doing the new act competitions is really the first 2 years, I think, is the new act tour.
Someone's passed it, someone's not.
So the tour of duty.
I'm essentially your trophy wife because I'm still in the
act
bracket.
And I'm your mentor.
Bracket. No.
Do you need a mentor?
Not
I'm very
you.
Happy to do it.
As a now established act, as of this moment.
As a veteran.
How much do you get to a gig a week?
I gig probably about 4 times a week.
Whoa. Sorry.
Is that
as your mentor, I think you're overtaxing yourself. Also, children
I do
need
all
care.
The childcare. So I'm doing all the comedy and all the childcare while you just sit on your laurels.
I sit at home going, can you bring me a travel cup when you're done doing gigs?
I'm trying to write myself to sleep.
Occasionally
we'll
picking up
again.
An award.
Esther, it's easy. Just do less gigs. I do probably now 4-ish a week. My dream number I always said was 3 a week because any more I don't write enough, I feel.
Yeah.
Right.
And any less I'm bad at comedy. But I think I'm on about 4-ish, 4 to 5. This has been a busy couple of months, so 4 or 5 this couple of months.
That's good. And where is your... Because back in the day, we had this wonderful catalogue of every gig in London called Time Out magazine. And for £3.95, you had a list of... every gig in London.
Oh, really?
And the contact details of the person that ran it by buying Time Out magazine. And now that doesn't exist. I don't know how new acts find... Because like, I go through sort of periods of, like, literally I would only do sort of the paid work that I'm getting. And then I go, oh, you're not writing anything new, Whitney. You're just paying the rent. Oh, you must go out and go and do some midweek... small gigs, do more new material.
Yeah.
And I go, how the fuck do I find them nowadays without... And you get on Facebook, everybody's got different pages, but it's not like having a, you know, one, you know, yellow pages, one book of going, right, let's see what's on tonight. What how do you source your gigs?
Do you want to go?
No, you can go.
Yeah, I was looking at you.
Oh, I couldn't tell you. The lighting is dark. When I started, I got a list off Comedy Collective, and then also would, I think someone said to me, I think Pauline Eyre, when I first met, she said, go to my Facebook and look at everything I've liked. And then I did that for a bit, like looking at what, it was all likes on Facebook and then noticing people put gigs up on Facebook. I think Facebook was the main way I got gigs, and now I've got like my set ones I like to go to and then other ones.
Do you travel a lot around the country, or is it mainly London?
I'm trying to now because I've cut my shifts at work to do... Because I've started to get some paid gigs, but I need a lot more paid gigs, and it's... I don't know exactly how you get
You'll
them.
You'll be doing a lot more in Manchester.
Yeah, I've got Manchester lined up and some newsreader work. Yeah. I need to do more. But I also don't have a car, so that's...
Yeah, that is...
That's a big old...
With the old restriction of dependence...
I love all the
do you know her nickname for her children?
I tried to list my Twitter followers as dependents on my last tax return. Apparently it doesn't work like that. Must limit the travelling.
Or encourage
or do you just... Oh, yeah.
You're so rude about our own children.
We kept the ones I didn't like.
Sometimes feel like I'm the one that's more invested than you.
I travelled to see the other four.
With a travel cot.
Yeah, with a travel
cot. I travelled to where they are and put them to sleep.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So rude.
Yeah, I know. I can't remember the question.
Do you
yes. Yeah, I mean, it must just logistically limit how much you can.
It does, but I'm very fortunate because I've got a lot of support.
Because you live in a family home.
I live in a family home.
When you talk about it, I say, and it's so, the modern Britain is so sort of like secular, and you know, I briefly go, wouldn't that be nice? And then I remember my parents, and I go, oh yeah, no. And
it is a bit weird because you do revert to being 14. Like, I do find myself storming upstairs to my own bedroom in a tantrum because my dad's like, why don't you do this properly? And it just, but no, it's great, and I love him very much because he's essentially my best friend, which is really sad, but it's true.
No, that's great. And a wonderful source of material.
He is an amazing source of material.
That IKEA story is priceless. Is it true?
No, that's not true. That one's made up, which he was a bit annoyed about because he was like, I know what a fucking Alec is. But it comes from other stuff. Like, he'll say other bits and I just change it around.
So he sees your gig or you told him?
He flew to Edinburgh, watched my show and flew back again straight away.
You did a solo show in Edinburgh?
No, I did a split show, but he... sorry, there was three of us, and then
people
don't
seem to do solo shows having done four gigs nowadays.
And yeah, no, I am not doing a solo show. But he flew up, watched me for the only time he's ever seen me, and then flew back.
So did you with one other comic or two other comics? Or?
There's three of us doing it, and then we had two other comics come in.
All right, and rotate. Where did you do that?
We did that at Espionage.
Okay, cool. Have you done Edinburgh, Heidi?
I did it for the first time to see it, and I did a split hour with Will Rowland in the caves for Just a Tonic.
Just a Tonic, yeah. And what, did you enjoy yourself?
I did. It was...
Did you do the full month?
Did the full month, yep. And it was what we wanted, which was a learning experience. Because we were like on at 3:40 and we had a very hot room, which had quite a weird setup, and we're both very low energy. So it was us learning over the month how to keep the audience.
It is the most amazing
alive.
Boot camp. I remember 2007 was my first Edinburgh, going up with the Hackney Empire. It still goes now as the New Act. It's just anonymously called the New Act competition, isn't it? It used to be the Hackney Empire New Act Award.
Oh, is it
Award.
The Natties?
Did you not have a great experience on those?
No,
not. Oh. That's the sort of like the noise
that will,
you've just,
that will literally be ingrained in my brain as the worst thing that ever I did.
Right, well,
even
tell
the
more.
Man who took his trousers off.
That was brilliant. Natty's just, I just remember, like, because there's no MC and you were just like there and there's 25 other acts and it was just.
Where
like,
was the heat?
Rich Mix.
Right, okay.
Just get on stage.
It's pretty cold. Room that,
talk to
it?
Silence and get off, and then it was just a one-on-one off, and I was like, that is just pretty brutal.
When I did it, the mic cord was wrapping around the stand progressively more and more between each act. Right. So when I got up, you couldn't move it more than like that far from the mic, an arm's length for the radio. But apparently, by the end, people couldn't get it out of the stand almost, and eventually, and they didn't fix it in the interval.
It sounds like somebody setting it up. I mean,
apparently, an audience member got up and untwirled it between them.
That's brilliant. It is very, when you're new, you know, going up there at such a condensed of time that the idea of taking enough time to sort out the mic cable. Seems like I've got to get through to my jokes. But the fact of the matter is you take your time, own it, unwind the cable, make yourself comfortable up there, make the space your own. And
it's just not that type of environment, though, is it? It's quite pressured and.
Because
there's no audience. It's not even like there's an audience you can kind of banter
really,
with.
There's no audience at all.
It's just the judges.
Wow.
But there's like 10 or 15 judges or something weird.
Oh, was there? There was literally three or four when
I was really?
There. And then just the acts like kind of splayed around the edges of the room.
The final's now in the Barbican, isn't it? Also?
Oh, wow.
The final's meant to be amazing. Like, lovely atmosphere.
Was it run this year? I didn't hear of anyone doing it.
The people who ran it originally, when it was out in the Empire, are sort of like quite sort of legends of East London entertainment. They literally like run music hall from like, you know, briefly
Victorian
after the
England.
War. Yeah. Yeah, and,
a society of vampires putting on comedy shows.
Yes.
We need to diversify.
How can we make people come to us in dark rooms? Run a comedy club. This is brilliant. Plans to go back to Edinburgh next year?
Yeah.
Solo or
no.
Whether or not? I think the solo show can, you know, wait. I see a lot of people doing it too soon, in my humble opinion.
No, I'm not going to do a solo show. I'm going to do a split.
This is when Heidi says she's doing a solo show.
Really? Wait. I am hoping to, but I talked to my agents about it and we're still figuring out. But it's basically I've got an idea that I don't think I could wait another year on.
Fair enough.
And because the writing for years and all that, I was just like, I just got...
Get on with it.
Get on with it, yeah. Like...
There's no set pattern. After me just saying you can wait, there is no set pattern. If you have got a story to tell, I mean, there's a very difference with Edinburgh shows that you can do a narrative.
Yeah.
I've always just done an hour of stand-up, which takes... I think longer than having a story.
I think doing the half hour is going, I need a while before I can keep an audience engaged with an hour of stand-up.
Mm.
And then this idea is very much more my writing style, so I thought maybe it'll work.
Do you want to talk about what it is, or do you want to keep your powder dry?
I think I won't say what it is because I keep accidentally getting excited and playing out and
that's
go,
all right.
Shut your mouth.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
All the best with it, and I'm sure we'll see you back at the backyard soon.
Sorry, Esther was aggressive and it got out of hand.
Are you sorry that Heidi's just a massive tosser?
I mean, I think we've discovered a beautiful double act.
I
think
me and my kids.
If this
bring the kids.
My aggression is mainly around the fact she forced me to have the children, and then she just has zero.
It was for the lulls.
So I feel like I've sacrificed my comedy career to look after the children so that you could flourish.
I didn't want you to have a personality.
What are we calling? What are we calling this sitcom? Only
Esther
two out the kids
up.
Survived.
I forgot about the kids, yeah.
The Fritzl conspiracy.
I forgot about the kids.
That should be the name.
The Fritzl conspiracy. Yeah. Like the God delusion, the Fritzl conspiracy. Yeah.
That's how it happened.
It's like, a family it? Home.
A lot of comedy clubs are in basements. You're going to tour very well.
Heidi just keeps me in the basement.
Thank you very much for having us.
Not at all. Not at all. Both did work beautifully tonight. It was a good night. Good night. Over 100 people in. Great show.
Oh, wow. Mm. Thanks.
Thank you.